Thanks for joining us for Season 6 of the ACED IT Podcast. ACED IT is brought to you via the Justice Community Opioid Innovation Network, or JCOIN, with funding from the National Institute on Drug Abuse. I'm Danielle Rudes, your host, coming to you from Sam Houston State University in Texas and bringing you amazing science from today's top scholars and researchers in easy-to-understand language. The theme of Season 6 is diversity, equity, and inclusivity within the justice and health research field. I can't wait to share this season with you. Thanks for listening. Now, let's get started. Opioid use disorder and associated opioid overdose represent a major public health crisis in the United States today. If opioid use disorder is hurting everyone, it is especially harming individuals from vulnerable populations like pregnant people. Now, just a side note, pregnant people is the most appropriate way to talk about the folks who are pregnant. But this study, the one I'm covering on today's episode, specifically uses the term women. So for the remainder of this podcast, I will too. The use of opioids during pregnancy quadrupled from 1999 to 2014. There are a lot of negative outcomes from maternal opioid use, like early labor, stillbirth, and maternal mortality. While there are serious concerns for pregnant women with opioid use disorder, these women face tremendous barriers to accessing opioid use disorder treatment. These barriers include a pronounced lack of childcare, limited family support, and unstable housing. When pregnant women seek opioid use disorder treatment, the standard option is to provide medication for opioid use disorder, or what's commonly called MOUD. MOUD includes methadone, buprenorphine, and naltrexone, in addition to comprehensive services. Methadone is the most common of those medications for the treatment of pregnant women. Research even shows that MOUD can increase women's access to prenatal care and decrease their rates of opioid use and mortality. All this to say there are positive impacts of MOUD for pregnant women. In one study, Tini Huchian from the University of Chicago's School of Social Service Administration and her colleagues wanted to examine the disparities in access and retention for pregnant and non-pregnant women in opioid treatment programs in a diverse community sample. They used a healthcare disparities conceptual framework to do this. In a healthcare disparities conceptual framework, there are three stages: 1, detect; 2, understand; and 3, reduce. You might have remembered these from another episode in this season. The researchers used the first two stages of this framework, detect and understand, to detect disparities in wait time and retention for OUD treatment, and to understand which factors are associated with wait time and retention for pregnant and non-pregnant women with opioid use disorder. How did the researchers answer their questions? Well, first they had to gather their data. The researchers used data from the Los Angeles County Participant Reporting System, abbreviated as LACPRS, and the Integrated Substance Abuse Treatment to Eliminate Disparities, or ISATED, program survey. The LACPRS data was collected by intake counselors at treatment admission and through interviews. The sample included 12,558 clients, with 285 of them being pregnant. The data was collected between 2006 to 2011, and also in 2013, 2015, and 2017. A little over 50% of the pregnant women in the sample were non-Latina white, and the same is true for non-pregnant women. The researchers used a multi-level negative binomial regression, aka fancy stats. Basically, there were two dependent variables that were looked at here: access and retention. These are what's known as count variables. Count variables are pretty much exactly like what they sound like. They count something. In this case, they counted the number of waiting days to represent access and the number of days in treatment to represent retention. The analysis was multi-level because the researchers were looking at both client or individual level variables as well as program level variables. This multi-level data led the researchers to group clients together based on the program they were in and the year their data was collected. Access was measured by the number of days clients spent on the waiting list prior to admission into a treatment program. The other dependent variable, retention, was measured by the number of days clients were in treatment from entry to exit. The independent variable, or the main variable the researchers were looking at to see if it had a relationship with access and retention, was pregnancy at admission. Okay, so you with me so far? Let's first look at the findings simply through the lens of demographics. The researchers found that pregnant women spend less time waiting for treatment than non-pregnant women, and they stay in treatment for longer. Women who were pregnant were more likely to be younger, began using a primary drug at a younger age, and used that drug less frequently in the last 30 days compared to women who were not pregnant. They also saw that a relationship between race and pregnancy status at admission. That was, women who were non-Latina white were more likely to be pregnant. When it came to the treatment types and pregnancy, there were very few differences. Pregnant women were more likely to be in MOUD treatment and counseling programs. However, pregnant women were less likely to be in residential treatment. Okay, now that we have those main analyses tuned up, let's start with additional findings. So we'll start with just pregnant women. Older pregnant women and homeless pregnant women were more likely to spend time on the waiting list. While looking at race, we find that pregnant women who were Latina were more likely to have longer retention or time in the program. Pregnant women who used opioids more frequently in the 30 days before they entered treatment were less likely to be retained in treatment. Now, moving on to non-pregnant women. The non-pregnant women who had less access to treatment were those who were older, Latina, experienced homelessness, had prior treatment, and had a mandated referral. On the other hand, these non-pregnant women had more access if they were employed, Medi-Cal eligible, or were receiving methadone or counseling already. Non-pregnant women had differences in the amount of time they spent in treatment too. Those non-pregnant women who spent longer in their treatment program were older, Black, had experienced homelessness, and received methadone or counseling. Okay, hold on. I know that's a lot. Let me just summarize here so you can fully understand what the researchers found. Starting off, it's important to mention that pregnant women in opioid use disorder treatment had shorter wait times to get into the program, and once they were in, they spent longer in those programs. The researchers posit that this might be in part because more pregnant women were eligible for Medi-Cal. That's California's Medicare system, meaning they had expedited access to treatment. Pregnant women were also more likely to be receiving MOUD with methadone, which is, in turn, related to reduced wait times and increased retention. Even though pregnant women were more likely to be receiving MOUD, the number of women receiving MOUD is still far lower than the national average. In California, Medi-Cal eligibility and services for pregnant women are generous. Pregnancy services include services that are required for the health of the pregnant woman and the fetus, and there's also drug coverage with pharmaceutical benefits. The benefits of Medicaid for vulnerable populations are very clear in this study, and the researchers argue that expanding Medicaid in the U.S., maybe to look similar to Medi-Cal, will greatly improve access to the standard of care for pregnant women in opioid use disorder treatment, and that is incredibly important. There is also importance to the findings regarding race in this study. Latina pregnant women waited longer to get into treatment, but they stayed in treatment longer. Latina women regularly lack access to additional social services during their treatment, but when they are able to get these services, the benefits for them are clear. The researchers argue that there needs to be a provision of both integrated social services and culturally competent services to make sure that all clients have better access to what they need. Methadone may be the standard of care for pregnant women in opioid use disorder treatment, but there are still a lot of misconceptions regarding methadone. Some people may believe that providing methadone is simply replacing one drug for another, or that methadone will harm an unborn child, neither of which are true. The fact that pregnant women in this study were more likely than non-pregnant women to receive methadone might show us that there is some progress being made to get rid of that methadone stigma. While medication and counseling are good, pregnant women have a need for more comprehensive services. There is currently a lack of mental health services, childcare, and parenting support for pregnant women seeking out opioid use disorder treatment. If we want to improve outcomes for pregnant women, then these barriers need to be addressed. Additionally, there are barriers for all women, not just pregnant women, like education, employment challenges, and mental health services. Comprehensive services are needed for those too. It is critical that we do a much better job implementing gender-responsive services for pregnant women, for all women, because we can. And it's absolutely the best care we can provide for women and their families. What we need is improvements in Medicaid nationwide, comprehensive services to go with medication in treatment, and gender-responsive services. We need to make sure women and all vulnerable populations of pregnant people are given the best chance of access and retention in opioid use disorder treatment. Thanks for tuning in to ACEDIT, where we translate science into sense. You can find ACEDIT anywhere you listen to podcasts and check out our other offerings on JTEC. That's www.jcoinctc.org/JTEC. That's J-T-E-C. We consider it our mission to help everyone learn. On JTEC, you'll find e-learning courses, webinars, and other trainings, all geared to help you learn about justice and health research and research methods quickly and easily. Special shout out here to George Mason University, home of the Coordination and Translation Center for JCoin, Sam Houston State University, and National Institute on Drug Abuse, and the National Institute of Health. Also, if you'd like us to break down some research that you've read or produced in a future episode of the podcast, send it to me at droods, R-U-D-E-S, @shsu.edu. See you next time on ACEDIT.